Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Even if he had secrets, there's due process. That's why we have tribunals.
The diplomatic corps knew who he was, and they still let him represent the Federation.
The Federation believes everyone deserves a second chance.
What about justice? What about the victims? Doesn't everyone deserve to pay for their actions?
So who decides? Hmm? Who pays and who gets redemption? Where's the line?
You're right, Chris. We've known each other for a very long time. See eye to eye on most things. But you haven't lived my life. You have the privilege of believing in what's best in people. Me? I happen to know there's some things in this world that don't deserve forgiveness.
I can start the podcast or you can start. You want to start the podcast?
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 198. 198. It's about Star Trek Strange New World season 2 episode 8, Under the Cloak of War. Now, what you might be noticing is that I'm talking, Dan, and Patrick is laughing.
Cuz you're literally not breathing. There's not a moment's space in between your sentences.
Yeah, but you might not hear the soothing, silky voice of Jesse.
Ah, yeah, I was wondering, because we have two administrative notes today, and that is one of them. I was wondering if you were going to intuit one of those administrative notes, Dan.
He is on a secret mission.
He was unavailable today.
Secret mission.
Jesse was unavailable this evening because, as you know, Paramount was very generous in releasing those old scientists.
Very generous.
Early. They released it early.
Early.
Which is great.
But
if you're a fan, but if you're like scrambling to podcast here, we got to squeeze in a whole extra podcast to get this episode 8 from season 2 out. But at the time we were available to record, two thirds of the podcast was available to record, and Jesse was the odd man out this evening. But he will be joining us for next episode. I shouldn't say next week's episode. It's just going to be the next episode on the normal schedule, which will be Bohemian Rhapsody, Subspace Rhapsody. Subspace Rhapsody.
They got you.
That's going to be crazy.
They got you.
That's going to be a wild. Wild one is my expectation anyway. So Jesse's not with us tonight, but Dan and I are going to figure out how to do this without Jesse.
What if we run out of things to say?
Well, we won't have him constantly just haranguing us.
Yeah, always haranguing all the time.
He's always tutting around. He's like, oh, Dan and Patrick, you guys are ridiculous.
And he's always hooting and hollering too.
There's a lot of hooting and hollering.
One thing Jesse does a lot is this is a weird sentence I construction. If there's one thing that Jesse does a lot of,
okay.
It is hooting and hollering.
Hooting and hollering. So no hooting and hollering from Jesse tonight. Dan and I will do our best to make up for it.
He's going to think we're talking shit when he hears this.
We are talking shit.
Oh yeah.
He's hooting and hollering at the speaker. Well, whatever device he's using to listen back to the podcast. I don't know that he listens to the podcast.
Do you think when people went back in radio days before TV, when they hooted and hollered at the radio, do you think they looked at the radio or do you think they were just like, rah?
I think I know what you mean. I think
like with the TV, they look at the TV and be like, rah.
I think they probably looked at the radio, but it's who knows? Maybe all the people in the family were gathered together and each were looking off in a different direction.
That's what I'm wondering.
Wow. Well, okay. One thing is Jesse's not here to keep Dan and I on the straight and narrow. Normally, both Dan and I don't want to embarrass ourselves in front of Jesse. Mm-hmm. We're going to imagine that he's here, which will help us remain calm and get through this whole discussion. mm-hmm. that we're going to have tonight
mm-hmm.
about Under the Cloak of War.
Under the Cloak of War.
Very serious episode.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to it just fine, even though Jesse's not here.
I agree with you in the abstract.
Okay, so that's administrative point number one. Mm-hmm. Do you know what administrative point number two is, Dan?
Something about episode 200.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yes, precisely. Something about episode 200. As this is episode 198 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, it just only goes to figure that very soon we will be achieving our 200th episode. Mm-hmm. And because of the way human brains work, we figured that this would be an appropriate time for a minor celebration of this podcast's accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that celebration on the 200th episode, we are requesting questions, comments, critiques, whatever you want to send in from our audience, whether in email form, old-fashioned old email form, which you can send to feedback@iscastartrek.com. We would love that. But even better, if you are so inclined, we would love to get an audio submission from our audience. We've already received a number of them. We want to receive a whole bunch more. We're going to play those, react to them, enjoy them. And if you would like to submit an audio submission, all you need to do is go to www.itsgotstartrek.com/record. Mm-hmm. That's itsgotstartrek.com/record. And in doing so, you will have the facility to record up to 90 seconds of audio on whatever device you're
using. That's a lot of audio,
Patrick.
That's
a fair amount of audio. 90 full seconds of audio, free of charge. Mm-hmm. That's why it's limited to 90 seconds, because the service we're using is free up to 90 seconds. And then you can send your comments in, and we will play them on air, and we will delight in them along with the rest of the audience. If you would like to send something longer, please feel free, but you'll have to email an audio file to feedback@discussstartrek.com. Okay, we look forward to hearing all those on our 200th episode, and we have some other fun surprises that we'll be playing around with on that episode. So something for you to look forward to, definitely something we look forward to. But in order to get to the 200th episode, we in fact first need to complete these few episodes, mm-hmm. these intervening episodes, including this one that you're listening to right now. I think those are all of our administrative notes. Record, feedback, you discuss Star Trek. Okay, good. I think we can get right into the episode.
We got this.
All right, we do got this, Dan.
Mm-hmm. We can do this.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
We can probably do it.
What if we don't?
Well, we've done it before without Jesse. Yeah, we have. I think, and are those episodes all ridiculous? We'd have to go back and listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
I should have done that in preparation for this episode. Why didn't I think of that? Because we have done a couple. We could have analyze what was good, what went wrong, what was weird. Was it odd that Jesse wasn't, you know, fumbling, like should I have brought a notebook to simulate Jesse's flipping through sheafs of paper? Feel how quiet it is right now. That's weird.
I know. It's an awkward place we're in right now.
It is upsetting. All right, let's just get to the discussion. Under the Cloak of War. It's a TV episode of Star Trek. It's very serious, PTSD.
Maybe that's also why it's awkward, because this was a very serious episode. And like, you know, it's not that it's hard to necessarily talk about like difficult subjects, although you'd think it'd be hard to talk about something that's difficult. That's beside the point. The point is that it is still more serious episode. So, you know, we want to be funny, but we also want to be reverent, or we don't give a shit. I don't know. That's what's going through my head right now. I don't know.
Funny but reverent. I do think it is plausible. I think it's possible, I should say. I think it's possible to be funny and irreverent without denigrating the concept of PTSD or war crimes.
Yeah.
Or other such things.
Yeah.
I certainly think it's possible. Whether we'll accomplish that, who knows? We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I guess start at the beginning.
Well, the very beginning, if we want to do the beginning.
Very, very fucking beginning.
When they did the previously on bit.
That's even before the beginning.
Yeah, it's before the beginning.
Holy shit.
I mean, I thought it was funny that they made a full-on acknowledgement of, like, Discovery Klingons. Of Discovery Klingons.
I thought that was totally cool.
It seemed like Discovery was ignoring Klingons purposefully or something for a long time. Were. And then they showed the Klingons as if it was like, yeah, they're just Klingons. What are you talking about? Which, of course, Star Trek has done in the past with Klingons.
Absolutely.
But it's just, it's fun. It's a fun Star Trek thing to do. It's be like, yeah, those Klingons look like that.
It reminded me of when in season 2 of Discovery, when we are when Pike goes back to the, you know, business. I don't want to give away spoilers is the problem. Okay. In season two, Pike is in an episode, and there are, but the previously on includes scenes from The Cage because it involves Pike, right? Mm-hmm. And that was amazing because they're just straight up showing scenes from The Cage, not even in a sense, not even technically a Star Trek episode, you could argue. That was cool. This was maybe not so extreme, but I agree with you. It was kind of interesting seeing the Discovery style Klingons in an episode that was going to focus so heavily on a particular Klingon.
So this takes place in Stardate 1875.4. Mm-hmm. And then back in time, it's a different thing.
Oh, in the flashback.
Yeah.
Because this is structured, this episode it was is structured with a bunch of flashbacks.
12648, which this is a really minor point that I'm making. But in the closed captioning, it shows the decimal place for the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. But when they say 12648, they don't include the decimal in the closed captioning.
So it was lazy closed captioning?
Either that or Star Trek meant to be like, no, we lost the decimal in that place in time, which probably was not the case.
No,
it was the closed captioning was lazy decimaling.
That was lazy decimaling, if you ask me. Definitely lazy decimaling. Yeah. So in the very beginning of the episode, in the teaser, we are introduced to the Kelsey May, the USS Kelsey May. Mm-hmm. Now, a couple things about this ship. Thing number one, if you go by the internet, I think people hate this ship. I think they thought it looked really goofy. I am agnostic on it. I think spaceships, some are, I really like the look of, but otherwise it's in space. I mean, I don't know. Does it matter all that much, like what the shape is, except for like Star Trek, you know, sci-fi reasons? Anyway, but some people thought this was a goofy ass looking ship.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the appearance. Oh, okay, there it is. I was looking up a picture because like I was totally blank. It looks like a passenger ship.
You know, sort of like a fancy yacht or something.
Yeah, right. But it's supposed to be like a military transport or something, isn't it?
Maybe not military, maybe ambassadorial.
Oh,
yeah, it's like State Department style Federation equivalent.
It's got some, maybe it could be like an Air Force One looking thing, I guess.
I I'm agnostic. I can understand where people are coming from if they think this is like lame. It was just interesting that how many people were like, man, that ship sucks.
I like so didn't note it that I forgot what it looked like. So.
Well, and see, here's the other thing that's interesting, right? In olden days Star Trek, in olden days TNG, DS9, etc., a ship like this that you see for a second, like 5 seconds or less, right? Mm-hmm. A couple seconds is barely on the screen. When they were doing the old models and even the early CGI, mm-hmm. they just recycled some shit and they'd glue some shit together or whatever and be like, here's a new ship. Mm-hmm. Or here's a ship in the background. It's all blurry. Who cares? Because it's only going to be seen for a couple seconds. And they just didn't have the facility to create a whole new ship. It was interesting here that the production design and the production quality on Strange New Worlds is of such a high degree that they are now, and the technology is just there, that they're now capable of doing these seemingly one-off ships and models. Granted, people didn't like this particular one, but that's kind of an interesting thing that's happening now, something you see on Lower Decks as well.
It does add to a sense, you know, of, I don't know, it's immersion when you do have situations like that, because like there's this sort of a subtle quality that sometimes you can't tell. It's hard to tell the difference of like, well, I'm seeing something, but something's not quite right. Something's off. And then, yeah, it's like, so it can be something like, oh yeah, it's because they use the same ship mm-hmm. every time. I couldn't put my finger on it before. So,
or they turn they would like turn a ship backwards.
Oh yeah.
You know, just like, mm-hmm. and put lights on the other side of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Back in the TNG.
This needs to be scrubbed.
another example of that, of exactly what you're talking about, Dan, is with Doc Ra. Is that his name, the ambassador?
Oh yeah, Doc Ra.
Doc Ra. Mm-hmm. Because there's something, you know, you're looking at him and you're like, okay, there's something a little different about this guy. There's something a little bit different about this Klingon action. What is going on here? And I mean, I guess there's a couple things you could look at, but the main thing to me is that he has his hair in dreadlocks,
yeah,
which is unusual. We don't generally, I don't think we've seen that before on a Klingon. And it seemed to be a point they were making he's trying to differentiate himself from his previous culture. Oh. And that's one of the ways he might be doing that, instead of having his hair all like open and free and kick-ass or tied back in a bow or something. He's doing the dreadlocks, which is pretty, pretty interesting. I don't know, I thought it was a subtle character design thing that they did to help establish what his character was all about.
So when Doc Grau walks, when Pike walks through, when Pike walks into this medical bay, like, for the first time,
Benga, and this is, are you talking about, like, after the Rectigino accident?
Oh, yeah, the Rectigino.
Like, is that when he went to the, is that the sound he made when he got burned?
Yeah, that's the burn. You know, I guessed, when they were talking about a Klingon caffeinated beverage, I guessed that was a Rectigino.
I guessed that, too.
Yeah, I was like, they're talking about Rect.
Now,
but they have caffeine on
just to calm the audience down. I think neither Dan nor I are taking a great deal of credit making that guess. I think it's fairly obvious.
No, I think I deserve some credit.
Deserve some credit.
I deserve some credit.
We both deserve some credit, but relative to other forms of credit, quite small.
Yeah. So I think it was.
Served in the Rectigino mug.
When they were taking him, Doc Ra around and showing him the ship or whatever, they took him in the medical bay, and then Mbenga had this fucking, like, stare, like, when he saw him come into there.
More sense on second viewing. First viewing, not that it didn't make sense, but it changes the interpretation. Mm-hmm. Because the interpretation on the first viewing, through at least for me, when seeing Mbenga, the way Dr. Mbenga reacted to Doc Ra, initially, I thought, oh, he just seeing any Klingon is freaking this motherfucker out. Like, his war stuff was so bad that just any Klingon shows up and he's upset, which was a little confusing because we've seen him interact with Klingons in a previous episode this season where indeed, yes, he was fighting them, but he didn't have that same panic attack reaction because he was having a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you watch it through the second time, you're like, oh, he's having a panic attack because it's this specific Klingon. It's Doc Ra, the person he aimed to and feels guilty for not killing a few years prior. That's why he's having a panic attack, because he's like, oh no, I'm supposed to be nice to this guy. I can see where you'd have some sort of a mental issue having to being polite to a person that you tried to kill.
Speaking of seeing things first time through, on the scene where Ra and him were doing, what was that, some kind of Klingon jiu-jitsu, which is no Ambo-jutsu.
It was not Ambo-jutsu.
Ambo-jutsu, whatever. Yeah. I don't know how you pronounce it. When Ra says, I look forward to our next session, I didn't realize this till the second viewing, but that's kind of funny he said that, because their next session, he gets killed.
Yeah, that's right.
totally gets killed. And I guess we never really get to, well, maybe we can talk about that later. We never really get to see what happens. I guess we can make some guesses, but talking about Mbenga has he has post-traumatic stress from this.
Yeah, clearly
Chapel obviously does to a lesser degree. We find out why. I mean, Mbenga, even without that whole like end mission, by the way, he was going someone's got to complete this mission, right? When he at the very end, like, Chapel was like, you don't need to do this, and he goes, why? Someone's got to complete this mission. I guess we were never really made quite clear what that mission was. Was the mission specifically kill Doc Ra? Like, I don't know what I thought it was more just a battle to win territory, but he's talking about mission accomplished. So I'm not really, wasn't clear what that mission, maybe it was a personal mission that he like got to kill Doc Ra or something.
I think the point you've brought up is an illustration for the perspective that this episode is powerful. It is well performed. You can kind of see what they're trying to go for, but it slips up, I think, in a few places.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some things that are unclear and not just purposefully ambiguous. I know that particularly with the ending, they were trying to be ambiguous. They're trying to make a point in the ambiguity of what's going on here. But it's sort of tricky because, like, with this whole Doc Ra guy, I'm not sure if we're supposed to understand that he's reformed or not reformed or you know what I'm saying? Like, what exactly, like, from Mbenga's perspective, we're supposed to assume that Mbenga and Ortegas are the ones that are correct and that this fella is either outright sneaky and doing some shady stuff and going to spy, or is just doing stuff for his own whatever, and making sure he's got the nicest life he can, but that he doesn't actually believe any of it. But I don't know. I don't know if I buy that from how he was portrayed.
Well, I know. So the way I saw it, there were a few things that made me think that he was probably not reformed. Real quick, I guess. So Ortegas, she also was, she didn't have, she was like pissed off, but she didn't have the same level of like trauma that Chapel and Mbenga.
Well, cause she wasn't,
she wasn't
in that particular bat. She right. had, she had, had war experience, but she wasn't mm-hmm. on the ground in the situation they were in.
So
with this particular yeah, fella.
Makes sense. So, there was a few things. So when they went back to the scene where they were fighting in the Klingon jiu-jitsu or judo, that's what it was, Klingon judo, at the very end, like, he grabs his cane, you know, as he's leaving, and it seemed to me that evokes images of like Yoda doing that in Star Wars, but I mean, I think they were sending a different message with Dokra. I think when he was grabbing the cane, it was kind of showing like, this guy's all for show. Like, he's got this cane that's supposed to be like, oh, this is my, like, I have this cane because of this injury I have, much like I'm doing this whole diplomatic thing because of the trauma I faced during the war. It's like, but he, even though he says he has this injury on his leg, he's still able to do judo. So it's part for show is the point. Is the cane is part for show. Just like his mission for diplomacy, you could say is for show as well, because it's just a means for an end for him. He does whatever is going to get him the most favor with the group he's trying to please. He was torturing Klingons back then, and now it's like, okay, that's not where the scene's at. The scene at is now I will benefit from being this leader that brings everyone together. Because he keeps talking about like his trauma and how it was his injuries and shit, and like saying it in front of them is really insensitive. You know,
I can buy into all of that. It's just that there's some other things that undercut that, either information or lack of information. So regarding the whole him being an ambassador and that somehow benefiting him, okay, I can see a scenario where that's the case, but is it really like would you expect a Klingon to be like, you know what, I'm gonna have a more nice life with a bunch of humans? Yes. Is it plausible? Yeah. But did we get enough information to say that this guy, that was his goal? Like his considered plan was, you know, fuck this Klingon culture, I'm ditching out. And then if that is his plan, is that not potentially evidence that he does find his culture distasteful and that's why he left?
I do think that, yes, he does find his culture distasteful. And I do think that there's a certain part of him that does, I think he does feel guilt. But I think underneath, the person who he is he's a person who always wants to be in control. It's like when you think you're reformed and immediately you expect everyone around you to forgive you. There's kind of a cluelessness there, I think. So I don't think it was necessarily being malicious. I think he thought he was reformed, but I think one of the things they're trying to say is like, you may think you're reformed, but don't try to understand, like act like you were on the front lines with us, you know? And so he just seems kind of like clueless. But his underlying personality of need to please powerful groups and his need to control is still present, guiding him.
I can totally see that again, but my issue is more in the execution and not fully getting that from what I saw on screen, or at least being confused and not confused in a this is an interesting philosophical proposition, I don't know which way to go way. Confused in an I'm not clear in what I'm being shown. Because, for example, you talked about the fight between Dr. Mbenga and Doc Ra, and I Strange New Worlds has had some pretty awesome fight scenes and choreography.
Delicious.
Ooh, very delicious. and Babs Ola Schoonmaken is he's like a top of the world martial artist in real life. Before acting, he was kicking ass. I mean, he knows what he's doing. But the choreography of this particular scene was sort of weak, in my opinion. It looked like he was fighting an old man.
Yeah.
And that's not to denigrate the absolutely brilliant Robert Wisdom, who plays Doc Ra.
I feel like I recognized him from somewhere.
Oh, yeah. You saw him probably most recently on Barry. He was on Barry. He played the father of a murdered police woman.
Oh, right. Yes. Right? Yes. I remember that.
Robert Wisdom is fucking amazing. And I think he does a great job here. But I'm almost thinking, like, is he such a good actor that I bought into him and sympathized too much with his character to not? I was really leaning more watching this as this guy. He is guilty of all these things. And I don't disagree with Dr. Mbenga's point that people do deserve justice. Mm-hmm. And maybe this guy has gotten off light, as often happens in the real politic of the world, where you're just like, oh, you got to be nice to this guy now, even though he killed millions of people or whatever. I think there is something there, but I don't know. It just seemed like he was pretty sincere for the most part.
I think like it was weird. Yeah, it was. What was so? What, first of all, that you said about the fight scene. Did you were you expecting like a choreographed like fight scene? Or I think the whole point was to just show like to show him dying. It wasn't really meant.
Not at the end. I'm talking about the when they're doing the jujitsu.
Oh yeah,
that's the part where it just seemed like it looked like there was a slow grappling with an older gentleman. And I think the point we were supposed to get was that he is, like you were saying that you got the point that I think was trying to be made. I think they just didn't execute it great. This guy is serious. This cane is a bit of a joke. He can kick ass. It didn't look to me like he could kick ass. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a Klingon, and Benga, who we are told is also a super badass dude. They were trying to make them seem evenly matched, and it didn't look like it to me. And then when Doc Ra was walking to his cane, I think we were supposed to know like, oh, okay, this cane is bullshit, but I don't know, he was limping a little bit.
Yeah, I think to me it seemed like he dominated the fight, like totally in that jiu-jitsu fight. And what I was judo fight rather.
You have more experience in this area than I do. So
well, I don't have any experience in Klingon judo, but
wait, how the fuck did you get on this podcast?
I don't know. I guess I just lied on my resume. I think to me it looked like he was. I mean, he definitely tossed Mbanga around. Like I thought he tossed Mbanga around more.
It looked lame to me.
Well, and what I was gathering, I mean, the thing is you watch like, I mean, UFC when the very first one, like the very first ones where like matches would go on for 30 minutes and they'd just be on the ground not moving.
Yeah.
Like, fights can be lame looking.
No, I get it. I'm talking from a cinematic perspective. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not trying to be like overly critical of a short scene, but I know it's one of the many things that threw me off.
I guess what emotion struck me when I was watching that is how like he exerted so much control over Mbanga and his fellow soldiers, or I don't know what you call it. And so the issue here is the fact that this guy is always sort of the one dominating. He's the one in control. It's this feeling of anger. It's like for me, and this is just me trying to put myself in that scenario. I'm not speaking for the characters. Being dominated like that, I get like, if I lose something that I think I should win, I feel angry and I feel ashamed. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the fight was to me when I was watching that. I was like, oh man, not only did he like fuck up like Mbanga and all his friends and do all this fucked up shit with torture and all that, but now he's beating him in a fight. It's just kind of showing like,
did he beat him in the fight?
Well,
to me that's an honest question, because Mbanga is all like, you know, looks like he's about to crack him in the skull.
No, see, yeah, you're right. It did culminate in like Mbanga like about to fuck him up.
But I honestly don't know if punching a Klingon in the face is meaningful.
Yeah, when I say win the fight, I guess I mean in terms of like, because it looked to me like they were going for points, like they were just like take someone down. Let it back up. Like, okay. I don't think it was meant to be a full on fist fight. It was just meant to be like, okay, I got you down. Now, it's like they were training. That's what I got. It's like they were doing training.
Yeah.
And he was just tossing and banging around and being like, I'm the one in control. And even though he's not saying this, and Banga like handled it great. For me, I'd be like, man, not only did you fuck my shit up before, now you're fucking my shit up now. It's just this constant insult. But then at the end, and Banga's all composed. And at the end, he's like,
stop.
And he like fucking,
yeah, that's right.
In the end, he showed is like, no, I would have fucked you up. And he would have fucked him up because that's when we,
if he doesn't hold back.
Yeah. If he doesn't hold back, which, there was, I guess there was a few moments I pulled out, but like, I only mentioned,
are these audio moments, Dan?
These are actually just a list. I don't have,
Are they just a text list that you're going to read out loud?
Yes.
Are you going to use a funny voice?
for this, Pike says, my sincere apologies, Ambassador Ra. Ra says, none are needed, Captain. As I said,
none are needed.
I bear no grudge.
God, that wonderful voice Robert Wisdom has.
Well, I bear no grudge. None needed, Captain. As I said, I bear no grudge.
I bought into it.
So when he said I bear no grudge,
I might be a pushover, but I bought into that.
Yeah, but to me, it's kind of like,
you think he did bear a grudge?
No, what I think is, I think as from Mbanga's perspective, I was like, I don't give a fuck what kind of grudge you held.
Oh,
I hold a grudge.
You.
Like, you don't have the right to say you bear no grudge because you fucked our shit up.
But the grudge was specifically up to Ortegas.
Yeah, I know. But it's, I think once again, you're right. Absolutely. But I think it's once again sort of like, it presents a flavor of who this guy kind of is. It's like it just to make the connection of call it symbolic or I don't know or analogous or
I
don't know.
Point. I agree.
But it's kind of like the principle of like him sitting there at the table chuckling, laughing. He's like, oh, I bear no grudge, you know, and all the. And
but he did say, you know, she'll have to she'll find peace in her own way, which is sort of a.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just sometimes people don't want to hear it from certain people. You know?
Well, of course.
Like, they don't. I think his best way to go would have been, well, a better way to go. I don't know what the best way to go is.
Would have been just been like, fuck you, Ortega.
No, just to shut up a little bit. I mean, even Chappell was like, can he just fucking shut up?
Yeah.
And like, it would be to shut up and listen more and stop.
He clearly likes the sound of his own voice.
Yeah, and stop being like, blah, 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 da, da, da. And he talks about his own trauma at one point. He was like, talking about how it was a traumatic experience. Yeah.
And he also at towards the end of the episode when he's talking with Mbenga, I think part of what sets Mbenga off is not
stop.
It's not just that that Doc Ra is comparing himself to Mbenga. He's referring to himself and Mbenga as victims, and he's victimizing himself, right?
Exactly.
And so I buy into these. I think there's plenty of threads in here that are like this guy is either a narcissist or he's an asshole or whatever, but maybe not enough for my taste. And maybe in going for ambiguity, they just made it a little bit more confusing than anything. Because the other thing I was confused about was it didn't seem like he recognized Mbenga. And I guess he was able to get away, and that's the whole thing that's happened. Mm-hmm. Is Mbenga killed those three other Klingons? They delayed him, and that gave Doc Ra enough time to escape. Okay, cool, but still, like you almost think, like wouldn't it be more interesting if he did recognize him, and that was the story? There was this cat and mouse. Did he or did he not? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just this whole structure sits on this whole, the fact that he lied. And I don't know. It's just like, I was just a little confused by all of this.
So buttons. So the part I was thinking about earlier, I think it was this, when Ross says, you don't put something like Jigal behind you, but you learn from it. Now that seems nice. That's a nice thing to say, but he's treating it like pragmatically.
I thought you were going to say, you don't put jabroni behind you.
You don't put jabronis behind you. You put them in front of you. He treats this situation as like this. He's the way he's looking at it is almost heartless. He's like, you learn from experience. It's like, if I were in Mbenga shoes, I'd be like, I didn't need to learn from that scenario. Yeah. Like, I know it's good to learn from it afterwards, but like, fuck you for treating all your torture as like a way for you to benefit yourself, you know? And then when he talks about, when he says, they do not believe I am reformed, Ross says that. He says, most people who see me as a Klingon bringer of death, they don't see that I'm reformed. I think that that's one of those things where if you're reformed, are you really going around telling everyone you're reformed? It's like, he might just be tactless, but like, sure. But I think like, just because you say you're reformed.
I agree.
It's a very good
observation.
Just because you say you're reformed doesn't mean you're not reformed, but at the same time, going around being like, oh, I'm enlightened now, I'm reformed. It's like, are you really? But I agree with you at the end. Yes.
Stop!
Like, when it was all, because now that you mention it, like, yes, thinking about the scenario presented, I don't think he was being overtly evil to try to manipulate into some Klingon master plan, obviously. He wanted to make things better. I think, like, him getting killed at the end, like, if it was Mbenga who killed him, yeah, it's a little like, did he, I mean, that's,
how about this?
That's not cool.
Hold that thought for a moment. We're going to take a quick break, because we're up on break time.
Oh, already?
But when we come back, we will talk more about how this episode is very interesting, very powerful, occasionally a little bit confusing, that's all.
Totally.
All right, we'll be right back.
We got this.
All right, you ready to be back?
I'm ready to be back. Are we back?
We are back.
He's back!
I said no.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that weird how the sound?
I said no.
When it says no.
I said no.
It sounds all metallic. Isn't that weird?
It is weird. Yes. Okay. We're back at it with the old Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, season 2, episode 8, Under the Cloak of War.
Under the Cloak of War.
Because Klingons during the war introduced an early cloaking technology.
Mm-hmm.
That was T'Kuvma. T'Kuvma had some crazy old cloaking stuff.
Oh yeah,
T'Kuvma.
Yes.
T'Kuvma.
go back in time to early Star Trek. No, it's got Star Trek episodes. When we did the Discovery, it was way, way early. It's like episode 7, 6 or 7 or something. And you can hear Dan speaking some impeccable Discovery era Klingonese.
This is the most excellent topic of conversation.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. Before we talk about some more confusing stuff.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I just wanted to briefly mention that, or briefly comment on the fact that this is a very much a MASH style episode. This thought is not original to me. It is all over the internet. Lots of people, at least people who are familiar with the old television program and or movie MASH.
That opening song did have words to it.
Yes, about suicide being painless and bringing on many changes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this I agree with the people who mentioned that on the internets, that this had MASH-like elements. This was a forward operating base hospital, similar to the mobile something
Bumble.
Something hospital. Whatever MASH stood for.
Wasn't Benga naked at the beginning when Chapel first saw him?
Another confusing thing about this episode. Yeah. So yes, it's like MASH, and Benga may or may not have been naked. His feet look were his feet like wet or covered in blood? Like I wasn't clear on what was going on. This episode has a lot that confuses me, even though I really enjoyed it and I was emotionally strongly affected, especially by the incoming transport, you know, like that business.
Yeah. Somewhere I have a file of that, and then I'll play it, and it'll be like we'll be on the next topic. The confusing part about what we were talking about with Ra at the end. So yeah, I just wanted to reinforce that I do agree with you that like something about the ending felt weird. Like what I kept telling myself is I was like, okay, this episode is not about how the ending came about. It's more about like the effect that the ending had. It's more about making you think about all this stuff. The problem is it was confusing, and it was like, even if this guy was like, you know, it's full of himself and he's not as reformed as he thinks he is or whatever, unless you think he was plotting like pure terribleness, which it doesn't seem like he was, it seems a little bit crazy to think that he would die in a knife fight. And the fact that they made it ambiguous is supposed to, I would think, would lead us to believe that it was Mbenga doing it.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think, honestly, I think that they sort of goofed up this ending a little.
Goofed.
I think they were not sure exactly which direction they wanted to go. But I want to ask you.
Bring on deceased.
I want to ask you, what do you think happened here at the end? And I'm not saying like, oh, do you think blah, blah, blah. I think like, what was the whole plan? Because it took me like three times watching the episode before I think I figured out what the actual plan was versus the other things I thought it could potentially be.
This is what I thought it was.
Incoming transport. Incoming transport. Right. Incoming transport. Incoming transport. Incoming transport.
You were right that it was late. Right.
Incoming
transport. And you were right that it was no longer relevant.
Wait.
Incoming transport.
It still makes me feel nervous.
Incoming transport.
Wait, I'm trying to do something here.
Incoming transport. Is everything okay?
That's a good question.
Okay. Wasn't a question, Pike.
Well done. You got really, you know, okay, so again, note to the listeners. Dan has an excellent setup here. We got a little studio thing here. We got a clock ticking, and Dan's got a laptop and a tablet, and he's got the sounds and jacked into the main board and all this.
New Angeles.
I think the next upgrade is that Dan's going to have to get a keyboard and map the sound effects to the keyboard so that he can do some more of this magic.
See,
he's going to break his tablet with the furiousness of how he's tapping on it.
I've actually thought about mapping things to actual keys, but that would take so much effort to remember week to week which sounds were to which keys.
You don't got to remember.
You don't got to remember nothing. How would I do it?
Okay, so
that's a good question.
The reason why I was asking you,
some of these sound bites I have listed as beat. They're just called beat because they're good for beats. This is apparently a good for beat for some reason. I'm sorry. We'll move on.
No, I want to hear this.
This is for some reason I've labeled this beat.
Oh, hey.
All good here too, Captain.
Oh yeah,
that's kind of like
hey.
All good here too, Captain.
New Angeles.
Incoming transport.
I'd have to work it out because I'm not putting them together right. But yeah, I think I like the.
All good here too, Captain.
I liked that the way they delivered that, and so that was a beat. Apparently, this is a beat.
Terra Luna.
I don't know why I labeled that as beat. I guess that would make a good drop, like in EDM. It's like everything drops and it goes.
Terra Luna.
I think you should get to work on this, and by the next episode, have something to show us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I should do that.
With your beats.
With your mad beats. Okay.
The ending. What do you think happened? Walk me through your perception, your guess as to what happens. We know it's done ambiguously or whatever, but there are certain things that are not meant to be ambiguous, I think. And then there are certain things that are meant to be ambiguous. And I want to hear what you think happened.
Okay. So.
And Benga, we see him open the knife.
So we open the case.
It has the knife.
He has the case. It wasn't one of those three-pronged open knife, Klingon knifeies. You don't open those.
It was like in the direction of that.
Yeah, in the direction of that.
Yeah. If Jesse were here, he would have been able to make up a fake Klingon name for the knife.
Yeah, some Maul.
And then Dan would have eventually looked it up.
Yeah.
And then it's called the Black Bar.
And then you would say, like, actually, no, I know which one you're talking about, but it's not that one. Yeah. That's what you would say.
I'd be like, Dan is stupid.
Yeah.
You're totally. So stupid.
And then I'd be like, oh man, I'm so dumb.
And then Jesse would be like, hey guys, it's all good.
I said no.
Isn't that weird how he says no?
I said no.
It sounds all weird and metallic. Anyways, but he says no.
I said no.
I know. Okay.
It's just sort of funny.
Don't you get it? No, don't you get it?
Because you're interrupting your own. No, you're in the middle of making a point.
I know.
And you keep saying different things.
let me click on this sound.
Part of it, you like pickles?
I know we already mentioned that they were making things ambiguously on purpose, but I think that's important because before I go into what I think happened, it is important to stress that I think the death between Benga and Ra, they wanted it to be ambiguous to 100%. I think they wanted it to be 100% ambiguous and more present you with the thought experiment or something. I think that's what they were going for. I don't know. What I think happened, even though it doesn't matter because it's not, we don't get to see, it makes more sense to me that M'Benga would have killed Dakra. Under normal circumstances, I would have said no, that makes the least amount of sense. M'Benga wouldn't do that. But the fact that they made it so shady and ambiguous and made you question it, I don't know. Unless they were going for some point that I missed, it seems to me like it was M'Benga is the one who stabbed him. And if that's the case, it's kind of fucked up because, like, now maybe it was just simply. Well, I guess the question is more who attacked who. M'Benga does say that Dakra attacked him. So, you know what? I'm going to take M'Benga's word for it and say that Dakra attacked him. But I think M'Benga, like. M'Benga definitely stabbed him, obviously. But it's just, I don't know. That's a really good question.
Here's the thing.
Why did they bother to make it so ambiguous then?
They've made it ambiguous. They filmed it to be ambiguous. We see shadows. And in fact, it's confusing because we see Chapel and she's behind M'Benga, and then we switch to this view where we just see through a frosted window of a struggle. So you think we're looking from Chapel's point of view, but we're not.
We're not.
We were just in Chapel. So that was already
Chapel because Chapel did see.
Yeah, and that's a mis. So that's first of all, that's a mistake, right? Mm-hmm. That's just an editorial mistake that they made, or
you think
error.
So? You think that was an error?
I think. I mean, I'm not saying an error that they didn't catch. It's just when you're creating art, as we know every week from this podcast that we do, there are things that happen that you're like, oh, I wish we could go back and fix that, but we can't because of how time.
So, what did you think it was supposed to be then?
Well, okay, I was just making the point that I already think that there are some issues with how they edited this scene together. I think that there's just some cinematic problems that I don't think you can argue are just an artistic choice. I think it's just like they goofed up. They didn't get the right coverage or whatever it was.
It was the drugs. I was tired.
But here's the other thing. Even though it's presented as being ambiguous, after watching the episode like three times, I don't really know how you can interpret it as anything other than M'Benga in a essentially premeditated fashion, planning to and accomplishing the murder of Rakta. Doc Ra.
So that, well, and actually, that's,
and I'll I can explain why. Well, I have evidence.
Before you do, I just want to point out that that's where I was leaning towards the whole time at first, but then I switched over when I thought of the line of Mbenga saying he attacked first, unless he meant like some.
Well, he said he didn't start it, but then you could argue, this guy started it a few years ago.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I guess I'll go. You know, it does make more sense. I guess the first.
Here's my evidence. My evidence is, first of all, Mbenga takes this case and opens it, and he's like, I have a knife. I have a Klingon knife that nobody knows I have.
Oh, hey.
That has the blood and the DNA of three Klingons.
No.
It has the blood and the DNA of Klingons that are known to have been murdered, supposedly by Doc Ra. I have, Dr. Mbenga has that in his possession. He opens it and he's looking at it. Now, maybe you could say, oh, he didn't necessarily know that Rakta was going to show up there. Okay, fine.
Doc Ra. You're thinking of
Rakta Gino.
Or I'm thinking of Prodigy, Star Trek Prodigy, the Rakta.
Please.
Okay, so he's got this case there. Maybe he hasn't, like, maybe he's not like, I'm going to fucking murder this dude. But he's thinking about it. He's got a plan here. Because after they have their struggle, and after Doc Ra ends up dead, it's a little confusing how they present it. But at the end, what they're saying is, they're saying they know that Doc Ra must have attacked Mbenga because the knife had the DNA of the people that everyone believes that Doc Ra killed.
Right.
So Mbenga, whether the murder was on purpose or in the heat of the moment,
serendipitous.
He's framing Doc Ra.
Right.
He didn't tell Captain Pike, oh, I killed those three Klingons. He's letting Captain Pike and other people know. This is when you watch if you watch it enough, this is the only conclusion.
But what I'm saying is serendipitous is the fact that it's like, oh, I killed these three ones. Now I can use this as an excuse to try to, that's basically what he was doing.
Yeah, but the thing is
it's a good thing he killed those three Klingons.
Well, but that's irrelevant to this because he did. And he caught Doc. It is in the sense that in this particular scenario, the reason why people are ready to believe that Doc Ra was the, even though it seems unusual with the way he was behaving, that he was the one that would attack Mbenga, totally out of character from everything Doc Ra has been doing the last few years, and totally the way he was acting on the ship. He was maybe being a bit of a dickhead, but he was polite and nice and talking peace and saying all the right things. And then he just randomly murders some dude, right? And the thing is part of the reason people believe it is because they assume the knife that he got stabbed with was his own knife.
Yeah, I know.
And
right.
So when I'm watching that, I'm thinking, yeah, of course, I don't buy the, oh, it's serendipitous, now I can happen to just frame him too. And Mbenga was like, hey, I can kill this guy and I don't have to tell the truth. Right, even though he feels guilty about it, because
what I was,
you would normally think, oh, Mbenga is going to reveal the truth and ruin this guy's life. Instead, he had the guy die by his own knife.
What I was saying was serendipitous was not the fact that he killed him and then was like, oh, by the way, there was just so happened to be other Klingon stuff there. I was just kind of saying like, him killing those Klingons beforehand put him in a situation where that he could then later on be like, I've got this knife. Now I can frame Doc Ra.
And that's what I'm saying. And then he did it.
Yeah, and then he did it.
And maybe he wouldn't have, or maybe he would have done something else, because there was also that Chekhov's gun of the Delton parsley. I was like, what are they going to poison? Is Dr. Mbenga going to poison Doc Ra? Poison his Rakta Gino? Because they show us Rakta Gino. They show us poison parsley. From Delta poison parsley. And then
delicious.
And then they, you know, it makes you think, is this going to be some sort of murder mystery? No, it wasn't a murder mystery. I think they didn't know 100% which direction they wanted to go in. I think they stuck to having some really good speeches here and there. But other than that, I think there was some stuff in here that sort of didn't make sense.
Yeah.
You can disagree with me, but then we'll have to fight.
No, I mean, I agree.
Jesse's not here to hold us apart.
Like I said, I was...
with his falcon-like arms.
Like I said...
holding each of our foreheads as we swing at each other. And he's like, guys.
Guys. Come on,
what are you doing? Just sit down. Let's just podcast. That's what we're here for.
That's what he has to do. That's our ritual before every podcast. I thought it was, by the way, like, speaking of the parsley, when I don't know if this was on purpose.
Speaking of the parsley.
When Pike was, like, asking about the parsley, like, Mbenga was already, like, dealing with some shit by seeing Dakra, and then Pike asked for some parsley, and Benga just had this look like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, I know,
like,
right?
But I don't know if that was intentional, but it just seemed like Mbenga was dealing with some... Mbenga gave some hardcore looks this episode. You know me and people mugging looks. I like it.
He's amazing. I mean, all the actors are fucking amazing on this show. And it's really helpful. I mean, which is a tradition in Star Trek where not all the stories necessarily work 100%, but they can be elevated by just the brilliance of the people who are playing the part.
So you think the episode was supposed to go in a different direction. I thought they were... I felt like... they were making some kind of point, and at the end they were more concerned with making the point than actually making the end fit in with like the rest of the shit. Because
I could see that too. I don't necessarily think it should have gone in a different direction. I kind of think that they wanted to go. They had the bones of like five different stories.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was trying to say. Is that you kind of thought they didn't? Not that you thought that it should have gone in a different direction. You thought they kind of.
I think they just kind of picked one at the end, and they're like, okay, this is what we're gonna. This is the direction we're gonna.
Yeah, because on the one hand, like seeing that whole death scene, I definitely was shocked. I was like, whoa, that's fucked up, and it made me think about some shit, and. And like I enjoyed this episode because it was pretty intense.
Me too. Me too.
It was intense. The end. I was like, oh, I was trying to say like in my head, like, okay, well, that's not really the point. The fight and the reason. I don't know. Whatever. It's supposed to let us think. It's supposed to be part of this bigger point. But it still felt like, geez, like who? Someone's going to be really pissed about this whole situation. Well, I guess Pike briefly mentions, I mean, the diplomatic corps is pissed off, but the Klingons aren't going to be pissed off.
Obviously,
they're not going to have a few episodes about Mbenga getting indicted for this shit, so they just got to move on, which is fine, but at the same time, it's still just kind of like, wow, he just murdered some fucking... Now, that he can claim self-defense, but I don't know. Like, yeah, he just murdered
What it may play into, and very light spoilers... 50, 60-year-old spoilers, because Mbenga is a character on TOS. He does show up on TOS, and he is not the chief medical officer. He's just a doctor.
Oh, maybe he gets, like, demoted.
So there, it could be that they are playing into this over the course of time. There are some reasons why maybe he gets either demoted or chooses himself to be in a different position. But let's talk about a few of the other confusing things. So another example is right at the end, all of a sudden, so they have all these powerful flashbacks, and all these flashbacks I thought were really, really great. Mm-hmm. But the very last one where all of a sudden it's like there's dead like children in sacks and stuff like that, and then and then he sees like his the guy, you know, that he feels bad about sending, you know, convincing to go back and fight, sees him dead. He sees all these dead people, but you know, you see like, oh, and you just hear like ADR audio saying like women and children.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay. But then he's talking to Captain Pike. He's like, what if I told you he not only ordered children killed, but he killed them himself? And I was like, yeah, but you didn't show us that. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's what you want us to think about the character, but we don't know that. And we don't show anything that shows that he knows that either.
Yeah.
He sees dead children in sacks.
I mean, I guess you could say that he was just presenting the scenario, being like, what if I told you that? Then would you care? I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
maybe... okay. But still, I mean, again, these are a couple things where I was like, if you want to complicate this and say this guy is a piece of shit. And by the way, this is not the first time they've done this on Star Trek. There are other characters. Like Dukat and others, where they play around with this, like, what's the deal? What do you do with these people? Especially when there's situations of politics or diplomacy, or where millions of lives are potentially at stake if you harm a particular bad person or whatever. I think there was a lot of stuff they could have done here. I think the stuff they did was interesting, kind of focusing on the PTSD part. I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was really brilliantly done. I thought it was brilliant how they portrayed war in a future Starfleet style. I thought that was both cool and interesting.
This needs to be scrubbed.
All of that was great. There were these bits and pieces of the story that were like, I was like, I don't know. I'm a little confused as to what's going on here. Like, what am I supposed to be thinking?
When I was watching that end bit, I kept speaking of Dukat. I was thinking of that, the Star Trek DS9 episode Waltz, when Sisko's last line, he goes, when he's talking about, referencing Dukat and that situation, he goes, he's talking to Dax. He goes, you know, old man, sometimes life seems so complicated. Nothing is truly good or evil. Everything seems to be a shade of gray. And then you spend some time with a man like Dukat and you realize that there is really such a thing as truly evil.
Yeah.
Now, this, for some reason, this, when I watched that scene, I was reminded of that Cisco scene because it is kind of like a similar idea of like, you don't deserve. And look, I'm not in a place where. I'm not going to stand in a place and saying everyone should be forgiven. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying I have the right to tell anyone who to forgive who.
No, it's a very interesting discussion, debate.
Right. So I'm not.
What's the threshold?
Yeah. So I'm not going to like make those judgments. But what I will say, it is kind of this attitude of like, is being evil. Is it is someone evil if they are unforgivable? You know, is that the same thing? I don't know. But it just made me. Take of what you will, but it just for some reason it reminded me of that scene, this idea some people are just fucked.
It's interesting.
And a lot of people think, and a lot of people, I guess, maybe are. You know, where do you stand on that? It's a tough question.
It is interesting that you bring that up because when we discussed Waltz, one of the things we talked about was that that ending with Cisco, or certainly my position, I can't remember if you agreed or not, but my position was that it was a little bit disappointing to have Cisco sort of simplify things to that pure evil.
Right.
And I understood
because it puts a label on someone, and when you put a label on someone, it dehumanizes them, and then it's sort of like, it's a way to excuse actions and excuse your actions on them, and almost excuse their actions in a way because they're not even human.
Well, and that's the thing is part of what makes me nervous about the term evil, specifically the term evil, I believe in the idea of unforgivable people or people where they're just not recoverable. Mm-hmm. But the problem with the concept of evil is it also potentially, as you were hinting at, removes the agency of that evil actor. If they are evil, they have no agency, right? They don't have the choice but to be evil. Right, that's sort of the definition of it, right? And that's fine. I have no problem with that kind of character in a story setup, but that's a very specific kind of character. And even more so here than with Dukat, because Dukat was charming and stuff, but he was a pretty fucked up dude. This guy, we're kind of told he's fucked up. We don't see him be fucked up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problem. I think
that is true.
It's hard to fully go onto the Mbenga side when you're being told verbally and you're being shown secondhand evidence, quite strong evidence, right? Like if I see civilians and dead children, yeah, I'm going to that's serious.
The only thing I could think is that, and I don't know that they did this, if they did this on purpose or not. The only thing I could think is that they're trying to put us on the side of someone like Pike or someone who's completely on the outside and trying to like see an experiment to see what it's like to observe trauma without having experienced it. Maybe. I don't know if they were going for that though.
You know, I hadn't thought of that. I think that is a very interesting way to look at it. And I think that if that is the case, that, I think from that perspective, you can recover some of the quality of this episode.
Because that would go back to the theme of what I was saying earlier about how Doc Roz is saying, like, you know, I'm reformed. Man, that was some shit we went through back then, right? This idea that he's like almost acting like, yeah, I know what you... I mean, it's like, I experienced this like awfulness that you did too, maybe on a different level than you, but we have that in common. We experienced this together. Yeah. And Mbenga's like, we didn't experience this together. Fuck you. Don't pretend that you can understand my trauma and talk about how difficult the situation was when you didn't fucking, when you were the one, not only not on our side, you were the one giving those orders.
You know, we've talked a lot about stuff that has confused me or like threw me off a little bit. But as I've tried to say, I really did enjoy this episode because even though there were a couple things that I didn't quite get or didn't quite buy into, there was tons of it that I did. Mm-hmm. The flashbacks, as I mentioned, I thought all the flashbacks were super powerful, super intense. Other than the Mbenga being potentially naked thing, which was also confusing.
It was mostly confusing. It's like, I wish they would have either showed him naked or not naked. But now I'm asking my question. It's like, were they trying to say he was naked? So that even makes it even weirder. Like, it would have been weird if they showed him naked running around. But the fact that, like, we can't tell is making it weirder to me because I'm just like, what were they doing? I don't know what they were going for there.
But the setup, the set that they had there, the whole idea of Chapel coming in, you know, they're introducing us to this battlefield through Chapel's eyes. Mm. And
Chapel.
It's so bad that she has to be beamed in, like as they just sort of fly over quick. And she immediately gets promoted to the head nurse.
Yeah.
And she doesn't get any chance to take in a show. show as...
Oh, yeah, I know. I guess that was a joke, right?
Yeah.
I think that was...
Buck Howard was, he's the chief medical officer here, played, of course, by
Clint Howard.
Clint Howard.
Yay.
Ron Howard's brother.
I saw him in a movie called Ice Cream Man when the cover of the movie was like a dude, was Clint Howard holding a giant oversized waffle cone with a severed head.
Was he the murderer in that movie?
Yeah, he played the Ice Cream Man.
But that's not the same as Dr. Giggles.
No, totally different. I never saw Dr. Giggles.
Well, Dr. Giggles, was he a dentist?
I don't know anything about Dr. Giggles.
I just remember he was a doctor and he giggled a lot.
Oh.
Which, I mean, you know.
Seems like something a dentist. That would make sense because dentists have laughing gas, plus dentists are cruel.
The movie provided what it sold on the poster.
It provided what it sold.
It did. It provided what it sold. Dr. Giggles. He was going around like cutting people
up.
And being all like.
Wrote a check that its ass could cash.
That's right.
So he was in another episode of Star Trek.
He was in, he's now been in 5 Star Trek series.
Wow. Good for
5 Star Trek
Good
series.
Good for him.
As when he was a child, when his brother was over on the Andy Griffith set, getting in fights with Otis. He was on the TOS set during the Corbinite maneuver. Ding! Yeah. We did it again. I've been doing that more this. Remember, I mentioned that last episode. Ding!
Yeah,
it's like a toaster. That's why. That's why.
When I noticed it this time, because I think probably because you mentioned it, my brain subconsciously turned on that listening.
I'm glad.
Part.
But yes, he played Baylock in TOS.
Baylock.
In the Corbomite maneuver.
Isn't that what Gandalf says to open the door? He goes, Baylock.
Baylock.
Bilbo.
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 Knock,
knock.
He also played Grady in Deep Space Nine's Past Tense Part 2. So you can scroll back into your feed. We discussed Past Tense long ago. I think it was a pretty intense and upsetting discussion.
Yeah.
Both because of the episode and because of contemporaneous events at the time in the real world.
At the time of what was happening in the real world.
Clint Howard also played Muck the Ferengi in Enterprise's Acquisition, which was a first season episode, where in typical UPN, United Paramount Network form, they insisted on squeezing in characters from other shows that they shouldn't have been squeezing into Enterprise. But it works. They always find a way to make it work. It was
power restored.
It was a little, but anyway. And then he also played the quote-unquote creepy Orion in Discovery's Will You Take My Hand? I think he was in one of those, was that season one of Discovery? I want to say it's season one of Discovery. They were in some shady place or some other. So anyway, 5 Star Trek series. Pretty impressive.
That is pretty impressive.
Have you been on 5 Star Trek series, Dan?
I have only been on 2. Just kidding. I haven't been on any.
Welcome to Jagal.
I don't know why.
This needs to be scrubbed.
It's like a classic Clint Howard delivery to me. I just imagine his face all scrunching up and being like,
He's great. He's really wonderful.
And hit our power supply.
Anything he shows up in. Hey, I mean, look at this. His character was barely in this episode.
The watch pot doesn't get the oil.
Is that how? I thought the. Is that, no, what, no. That's he, not no, how no. He fucked it up.
So, okay, this is what I'm getting at. This is, I mean, partly it's the writing, partly it's Clint Howard and the choice of the casting choice of Clint Howard. You have a character who is in this episode, a very intense episode. He's in it for maybe
comic relief.
He's a total of what, 30, 45 seconds?
Slight bit of levity they can add to the episode.
Well, not only levity, but he is a character that immediately you remember. You will remember this Star Trek character, and it's true of most of the characters he plays. You remember when Clint Howard is on Star Trek.
Good for him.
And in this case, one of the things is just that he's like, you know, I'm Buck Howard. But also, he keeps saying these phrases and he keeps getting them wrong.
Wait, Buck Howard? Isn't the name Buck Martinez?
Buck Martinez. Yeah. I was saying Buck.
Clint Howard.
It was a clumsy portmanteau of the character name and the real life.
Oh,
name.
You were making a joke.
No, I was not doing that on purpose. It is good that you called me out. Unfortunately, I do not have my sting set up to play some jazzy music.
You turned me into a monster.
A monster.
A monster. He doesn't say it like that.
What the fuck is this? That's
not... Welcome to Jagal.
You're welcome to Jagal. There we go.
No.
Prospero system.
Did you say say Ross Perot system?
No, Prospero.
Oh, Prospero. I thought you said Ross Perot system, Captain Pike. That's crazy.
I thought you said the Roscoe system.
No, anyway, Clint Howard, Buck Martinez, all his little phrases are a little wrong. It's like a watched pot doesn't boil. An oiled pot doesn't...
Watched pot doesn't get the oil.
Yeah.
A watched pot doesn't get the oil.
And then doesn't he say something about taking in a show?
Yeah, he does say something about taking in a show. I don't have a sound bit of that.
But so there's a couple things that this character does that stands out immediately and makes it fun. And part of it
he says, enjoy your downtime. See a show.
he's using these anachronistic phrases is what I'm getting at. They're and incorrectly. So they're anachronistic and he's using them incorrectly. And he's Clint Howard. And he's funny. And as a result, we enjoy world building, very swift world building in this battle zone, right? That's what I was trying to get at. Mm-hmm. And I got there in the end.
You got there.
We got there together, folks.
Speaking of jokes.
It's time for a break.
Oh, that's not a joke. That's not very funny.
How about you want to tell the setup and then we tell the punchline when we come back?
It's not an actual joke.
Oh, so it's not a joke.
It's just a segue to another jokey part of
this. It's just a humorous thing.
Yeah, we'll talk. Well, it's a teaser. Well, the audience has to listen to these ads from our sponsor and wait because they can't fast forward.
we'll be right back. Okay, we have returned.
We have returned. So,
Jesse was not here to steal my thunder coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes, we take a break and we wait and, maybe do something. And then every now and then, Jesse is just like, I'm fed up. I'm fed up with this waiting. It's time to go.
Yeah.
We're back.
We're back.
This is Jesse. We're back.
I'm Jesse. Look at me. I'm Jesse.
Doot, doot, doot.
Hi, I'm Jesse. I talk like this.
Boobity, 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 boops.
I do this. Boopa, doopa, doopa, doop. Dee, dee, double, doo, da.
Hi.
Oh, now you made me sad.
Yeah.
When he does this, when he goes, it like sets off some kind of like reflex urges to start going like. You ever do that where you go like,
that's not very funny, Jack.
And it like makes your head fill with blood and you just feel like your body's exploding. You're like.
I was with you partway down that runway, but then I had to taxi off to a different location.
Everyone's experienced that on the toilet.
Okay. Before we had to go break, you were about to make some sort of brilliant joke.
I wasn't going to make a brilliant joke.
Was it a joke about PTSD? Were you going to make fun of people with PTSD? Was that your plan?
No. No.
No. No.
Please.
No.
Hey, man, you're the one pushing the buttons. I can't get yelled at for this one.
You're right. You're very right.
I can get yelled at for all sorts of other stuff.
When Spock and Chapel are all chit-chatting, shooting the charting, Spock goes, Christine. And then Chapel goes, what? Oh, you're doing the word game. It's during dinner. So I thought that would, I don't know if you remember that part.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that was her being snarky. I wasn't quite sure what the word game was other than
I
thought the only thing I could think of, she was being snarky, like, oh, you're trying to like talk logic me into not feeling bad or something.
So
but I really had no idea.
You didn't, I had that in my notes to ask you if you had any clue what that was referring to, because I did not know what that was referring to. And I felt like I was either going insane or they cut a scene that we didn't get to see.
Because it's between, I think, Pike and Doc Rod. It's like, Ambassador, I hope you're enjoying our ship. And then it cuts to Spock going, Christine. And then, and she goes, he goes, Christine. And she goes, what? Oh, you're doing the word game. And then Pock's like, I'm sorry, I didn't really have one right now.
Were they playing Mad Libs?
I don't understand.
It doesn't make any sense, right?
Like I said, the only thing I can imagine is...
And you're looking at the official transcript.
Well, the official, yeah.
The official internet with a capital I transcript.
Exactly. That's what the official web says. And we also
web
watched the
Web 2.0.
He says, I'm sorry, I don't really have one right now. And he goes, you're under duress. It doesn't tell.
The under duress part, I get.
So wait, it doesn't say who's talking on this transcript because it's just, a closed captioning transcript. But I don't know who says, I'm sorry, I don't really have one right now. Is that Christine saying that? It doesn't matter. But yeah, the only thing I could think, other than it not making any sense, is like I just said, where maybe she was being like snarky and being like, oh, you're trying to talk me out of my emotions again or something like that. But I don't think she was doing that.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense.
And that's the only thing that I could imagine. It didn't make any sense. I didn't get it.
Well, just add it to the list. There's a fair number of things that are a little bit goofy.
About Spock and Christine's whole situation. So this was all about Spock, you know, trying to like ease her pain, mm-hmm. but it was also actually kind of related to the Doc Ross situation in a certain thematic way, because all right, Spock
I'm leaning back in my chair
because Spock was
raptly interested
just like Doc,
in this point,
just like Doc Ra, I think, was trying to help and make peace because he wanted peace, but ultimately he wanted himself to feel like mm-hmm. he was either he was trying to heal himself and he thought bringing peace would do that, or if he just wanted to feel like just generally good about himself, or if he wanted more power, I don't know. Regardless, there was a feeling that Doc Ra maybe subconsciously even was doing this for selfish reasons, which is not unusual. People mm-hmm. often talk about like, oh, a company contributes a lot of money to charity, and then
but then they get the tax break.
Yeah, but people complain about the tax break and how they're just doing it for
their
business.
And other people say, well, yes, maybe that's the case, but if it has a positive benefit, right. Is that good?
Right, exactly.
You can go round and round.
You can go round.
You can have whole podcasts in which you discuss this sort of thing.
Right, exactly. Precisely.
Conceivably.
Conceivably.
I don't believe they exist, but they could.
What does?
Podcasts that debate things like public policy.
I'm sure there is. Like, there's got to be. Isn't there a rule about that where if you can think of it on the internet, someone has done a podcast about it? Am I bastardizing some other rule?
Well, that's the rule 34.
Rule 34, what's that?
Rule... Okay. As Dan attempts to feign ignorance of Rule 34, as you well know, sir, Rule 34 says that if something exists, there is porn of it on the internet, and which is largely true. As an axiom, maybe not an axiom, maybe it's really more of an aphorism than an axiom, but it is largely true. And I think it is probably... at least to some degree transferable to the concept of podcasts. If you can imagine a concept, there is a podcast of that concept.
Mm-hmm. So how I relate that to what Doc Ra was doing, how ultimately you could say it was for selfish reasons. And then like what we just talked about, well, if it's bad, if it's selfish reasons, if it's doing good, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Spock was trying to heal Christine because he saw her in pain.
Sure.
Did it for her benefit, but yep. He was also really making it about himself. And she's
being a man.
She even said he was being making it about himself. And so, like, when he goes, one line is he goes, "I'm difficulty watching you experience such obvious distress. I want to help."
Yes.
He's making it about him. He goes, then he goes later in some other part of the show, he goes, "I want to help, but would it appear all that I am doing is making it worse?"
Yes.
About him. And then when she's finally like, "No, Spock, just give me some time. It's okay. Chill out."
Yeah.
And then he goes, "I understand. You require personal time
yeah.
away from me." Yeah. It's about him. Now, yeah. He doesn't, of course, know that he's doing that. But like that's the whole thing, is this idea that she's going through trauma. He's trying to understand it, but he can't mm-hmm. possibly understand it. So at a certain point, he just has to say, there's no way I can understand that. I should stop trying. That doesn't mean I should stop trying being awesome and make you feel better. Right. But like, listen, I need to just listen to what you're saying and not take it personally, because your feelings have nothing to do with me. And even if it did, fuck that, because you're going through trauma. Like, you need to experience that how you experience
it. It's a lesson he does eventually learn, because in Star Trek IV,
sorry. I don't know why. I have no idea why that was funny. I thought you were going for something in the episode. And it I am. Star Trek IV.
No, Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Which was made many years ago, but is in the future, from this episode.
In Star Trek IV, Dr. McCoy, at a certain point, tries to talk to the recently resurrected Spock about what it was like to be dead. Mm-hmm. And Spock refuses to have a discussion with McCoy, stating that he has no common frame of reference mm-hmm. upon which to have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And so learned that lesson here.
Oh yeah, hey,
Chapel.
Hey, that's a nice pull. I would have never made that connection.
That's why you brought me onto the podcast.
Yeah, me for my Klingon judo skills, yes. Which we're now finding out was a ruse, was a lie.
I can make all sorts of connections to Star Trek IV,
mm-hmm.
not to any other Star Treks, only to Star Trek IV.
Bills and bows. That's another thing that
Bilbo.
That's what Clint Howard was saying. Buck Martinez.
He bills kept saying, and bows. Yeah, that's right. He said a bunch of
bills and
shit.
Oh yeah, bills and bills and bows. People, bills and bowls. Let's go. That's what he says. Bills, and he said one more time. He said bills and bows. He said it. Bills and bows, people. Bills and bows. Let's go.
Did he say frozen does?
No, I wish he did though, because that would have made it so great.
Was he all like, "D's nuts, folks? D's nuts. Come on, gather around. D's nuts."
Yeah. Got your Fremunda cheese right here.
Bofa.
Bofa.
Bofa D's nuts.
Oh, boy.
Classic.
Oh, boy.
Classic. That's what's happened when Jesse's not here.
Yeah.
Jesse would be all like, guys.
Guys, that's not cool.
Cut that out.
Cut that out. You need to get serious.
Jesse has a meter stick, you know, he's always like whapping it into his palm.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so he's gonna wrap our knuckles.
He's gonna wrap our knuckles. He's good.
Wrap our knuckles.
Wrap our knuckles. What good?
What good?
But not this week. The other thing I wanted to say about the Spock and Chapel thing, though. Is that it's good advice for anybody. I think it does apply to anybody. We often, however, see this in media and in real life, unfortunately, in the context of men wanting to help, feeling either emasculated in some other way, powerless because they cannot help their partner, and often a female partner. Though, of course, not always. Mm-hmm. And so that is almost a trope. And we're seeing a Spock version of it, because he doesn't have... You pantomimed Spock being the whiny, self-centered guy. And again, not even necessarily a bad guy. Like, often these characters, these people are not bad people. They're just not self-reflective enough to understand that they are making it about themselves.
Right.
And that... they just might have to endure the fact that they are not always going to be in a position to be able to help the people they love. Mm-hmm. And that is something that for everyone is a very difficult lesson to learn, but it's an important lesson to learn, whether it's through a sitcom or Star Trek or learning through real life experience, that you've got to figure out the times when people need to got to do their own healing. And no matter how much you wish to be a part of it, it's just not going to happen. Yeah. It's not appropriate for you to be a part of it.
Right. I was just thinking about like Dakra dying again. I was thinking about Dakra dying again. I just said that twice.
You did say that twice. Would you like to say it one or two more times?
No.
Ambassador to Dakra, son of Ra'ul.
Oh no. Did you do that on purpose?
Do what on purpose?
Oh no, you're gonna do
Again, it wouldn't have happened if Jesse was here.
I know.
Blame Jesse.
When you were mentioning earlier how it would have been more effective if we had seen Dakra perform all the evil stuff. That is a good point, because maybe it would make the death seem more believable, like the murder seem more believable if we got to see it. I know it's like what I was saying was maybe they're trying to put us in the perspective of someone who wasn't there, but it's a lot to get the audience to sort of sympathize with someone murdering someone else for something they did in the past if we don't get to see what they do in the past. Well, you know, it requires us to sort of make it all cerebral and be like, huh, well, he must have deserved... It's just, it's hard.
Well, the point is that you could go either way, because I went the way where my default was to sympathize with him, because even a scene showing one of his officers saying, you know, he orders some attack and they're like, well, but that is a civilian target. And he's like, oh, damn the civilians, fuck the civilians, attack anyway. Even if we had seen him do that, like, there's a story to tell about the redemption of that person, right, and whether or not such a redemption is possible. And then the layer on top of that, which is like, again, I think they were trying to go for here, is question A is this redemption possible? And question B, or number two, is...
You're going to do a number two.
Is whether or not the redemption is possible, what does that say to the perspective of people who were truly victims of that person? And can there be different perspectives? And of course, obviously there can. But that, yep. So
I guess, and they weren't going for that story, is the thing, I guess. Or you think that they may have been, but they didn't have time. Oh my God.
They had...
You think
the
there wasn't
pieces.
Enough time?
The pieces were there.
Right.
The pieces were there. I think maybe I think they just had different directions they could have gone, and it slightly weakened the episode as a result. Not fully. It introduces these little things that the discussions are not... some people have compared this to Tuvix, and the thing about Tuvix is there's a real philosophical debate in Tuvix. It's a unique sci-fi only debate in Star Trek Voyager's Tuvix, which we did cover on a previous podcast. So there's a debate to be had there that's very interesting. A lot of the debates here are more like, wait, did he grab the knife first or not? Yeah. What did he say? Or did he give the order or not? It's unclear. And and is Mbenga lying to Pike, or is he exaggerating, or is he telling the truth? And it all depends on how you're coming at these characters.
I think they did a good job, like I said, of both with Spock and Doc Ra giving this idea of people thinking they're helping when actually like they're kind of like being... Actually, Spock wasn't being insane. It's unfortunate for me to compare Spock to Doc Ra because they're nothing alike. But Doc Ra sort of like thinking he's helping, but actually being tactless, being like a tactless sort of like ignorant asshole about it, you know, just this whole like, and there was some deception to him, I think, like I said, with the cane and just with him trying to really, it's just, he just has this need for attention and that kind of thing. And it's, he's not really doing, he just doesn't fucking get it. And so I do think they did a pretty good job with that. They, if anything though, they might've gone a little too far.
Wouldn't the story be more interesting if there was zero evidence of him being an asshole and Mbenga still gets in a fight with him at the end and kills him? Like, well, that might be a more interesting story.
Just out of nowhere, he was like, oh, by the way.
No, I'm saying if all the evidence for us not liking this guy comes from Mbenga and Chapel and their perspective as survivors of the war, that might be a more interesting story than giving us a few hints that this guy's a dickhead, but sort of not enough hints to make us sure.
Well, see, I think...
You know what I'm saying?
I think... Well, what I was saying is I think they gave maybe one too many hints that he was kind of a dickhead. Like, what I'm saying is he's not an... He's not an...
Make him not a dickhead.
He's not an overt, like, evil... He's not presented as an overt evil asshole, but he is presented as a guy... Even at the end when he's like telling Mbenga, let me help you heal. It's like this idea. It's like, man, you don't fucking get it. And Mbenga's even like... Oh, I love when Mbenga puts his hands together. It's like, please, just leave me alone. And like, he won't do it. He just won't fucking do it.
And which is to me, evidence that Mbenga was not... He was trying to avoid having to kill this guy.
Right.
But in the end, he decides he has to kill this guy.
Yeah, so I was just... like, to me, if anything, they could have pulled it back a little bit on how much this guy, like, was just being, like, demanding sort of forgiveness. How selfish he was being about it. And how his motives, I think, were questionable. If not evil, they were at least questionable.
Well, I think the other important thing to talk about in all this is that... is that Mbenga is guilty, and this is, there's a lot of, he's guilty about numerous things, and he's presented as being motivated by this guilt. And I think part of what we're supposed to really be debating is whether those motivations are solid motivations for what he's doing. So the first thing he's guilty about is it seems like he might be guilty that he didn't volunteer to kill Doc Ra to begin with, when the Andorian special forces guy was like trying, you know, hinting at, hey, you could take care of this guy, you're the ghost. I think he referred to him as the ghost or something. He was like, you can just go in there and get him.
I love this idea that Mbenga, if he was a D&D character, he wouldn't be like a paladin, because a paladin is a good fighter with questionable magic. He's a straight up cleric and a fighter. Like, he has awesome, he can fight like a motherfucker, and he can heal like a motherfucker. So he's a full on, he's OP. That's what they would call it. They called overpowered. Well, he's OP.
Potentially, I would argue, I mean, not argue, I would hope for, and I'm sure we'll get more insight into his past and to what point in his past was he a fighter?
Well, I said over,
what was he doing?
I said OP as a compliment.
That's no, I understand. Awesome, I understand. I'm just saying that I do think we're going to learn more. I look forward to that. But I think there's this interesting factor about his guilt. Should he have just agreed to kill this guy in the first place and avoided all these deaths, in his opinion? So that's point number one. Point number two is, he didn't help the special forces guys with the Protocol 12 stuff.
Yeah.
Again, but the first reason he didn't agree to do it for moral reasons. The second thing, he didn't give them the magic green juice, the Protocol 12, for moral reasons. He was morally opposed to the idea of giving them this. And then as a result, they all fucking died.
Well,
and his little friend died. That the friend, the guy who he patched up and convinced to go back to the battlefield.
Yeah, I think
that's another layer of guilt.
Yeah, so then the Andorian made a good point. I mean, when he said, I'd rather die tomorrow than today. Yeah, now, Mbenga's moral reasons, I wasn't sure if it was moral because I'm a doctor, I don't want to hurt people, or if it was more like, once I start doing this, it's going to get out of control, and then where does it stop?
And I think that's an interesting question.
But the problem was, is that he was, because then later he gave it to Chapel. He gave Chapel the Protocol 12. And that was kind of weird to me because I was like, I was like, okay, no, this episode. He gave her the Protocol 12 at the, he was like, take this with you. He gave her a green vial.
Yeah, that's right.
And so
but we don't know if she used it or not.
I don't know, but he gave it to her as far as, unless I remember it wrong.
But we did see, I mean, we first saw this in the much maligned fight scene early this season. Remember when they both were fighting all the Klingons?
Why was it much maligned?
Because a lot of people thought it was ridiculous.
I remember saying that because there was they fought like off six Klingons at a time. And
we were not so critical. Some people were just, frankly, I thought misogynistically critical. We didn't have a problem with the fight. We had a problem with the length of the fight. It just kept going on.
And I thought it was kind of.
It was redundant.
And how much protocol they had, it was like they were fighting off a shitload of Klingons. Yeah. But whatever, that's fine. It's all make believe. But the problem I guess I had with it happening in this episode with him giving Chapel the protocol 12 in this episode, unless I'm making this up and he didn't actually do that, but I'm pretty sure that happened, is that he explicitly refused it to the Andorians before, but then he gave it to Chapel. So it's kind of like he's picking and choosing who gets
morals shifted again.
Or his morals shifted. Yeah. But it's kind of weird because when you get into that territory of like, I have a principle, I'm not going to save. Part of having a principle of not doing something is at least presented in the format of a story, I would think. If you're going to bring up the fact that he refused it to the Andorians, you would at least make him have to be like, no, I'm not going to even give it to my good friend. That's how big my morals are.
I'm
not even going to save my friend with it. That's how much I'm sticking to my shit. Or if he was going to give it to her, there should have been a moment of realization of him being like, oh shit, well, like now I'm playing God. But you know what I'm saying? Like now I'm deciding who lives
and there's
and who
another,
dies.
There's another, and again.
And I thought that was a little inconsistent.
While I have critiques about the structure and some of the writing in this episode, there's a lot of brilliant stuff in it too. And I think one of the really brilliant things they do here is they have a quite subtle analogy between two different scenarios in which, so Mbenga, right, in his role as a doctor, his moral position with the special forces guy is basically, I'm a doctor, I don't want to take lives any longer. I don't think it's right to take lives. I'm just going to save lives. But then he is willing, totally justifiably, in most philosophical arguments, you know, depending on which perspective you have, when they murder the guy in the transporter, right? He's willing to kill the guy in the transporter to save more lives.
Well, yeah.
Right? Now, that's your standard thing. I think the reason that goes by that goes by real swiftly because that's...
What did you do?
That's one of the most standard, you know, the good of the many outweighs the good of the one.
What'd you do?
So that
pattern deleted.
That is a fairly standard thing. So you watch it and you're like, it's almost expected to see something like that. You're like, oh yeah, you let the poor guy that you thought was you were gonna save go in order to save the lives of these other people. Okay. But my point is that he's doing something similar with Doc Ra. He's saying, like, in his mind, he's like, if I kill this guy against my morals, if I kill this guy, more people will survive because of that. Now, the problem is the episode kind of didn't 100% set that up because this Doc Rock guy seems on the surface to be all about peace.
Like I said before, like I've been saying this episode, I think it was a lot of, I don't know. I think he had personal motivations that were questionable. And I think it goes beyond just like, oh, it doesn't matter how much of a tax break they get. They still gave money to charity. I mean, who knows? Like, I guess nothing in the episode presents it, but like if he got this peace treaty through, maybe he would be a total dick about it. I don't know. Maybe
he could be.
But they didn't really make a strong point of putting that across. But he also killed that guy. I thought he also killed that guy. So Chapel didn't have to, basically.
Well,
you're right.
He did it right away. There was no like considering or anything. It was just straight up boom. She was like, "What the fuck did you do?" And he's like, "Well, I mean," and again, when you're watching it, you're watching it from the perspective of like, of course, he did the very difficult decision. He made the difficult but correct decision there. Any other big things as we wind up the show? Any other big points? I have a few odds and ends.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any other big business?
Big business?
Big business.
Got some big business.
One
right here.
Odd and end.
Oh, why did I say that?
What'd you say?
I said I got some big business right here. I don't know why I said that. That's rude. I shouldn't say things like that. Right. Now that I pointed it out, I made it even ruder.
You're a misogynistic freak.
I had a giant poop.
You got a big old poop.
Yeah.
Dan regularly walks around with a sack full of poop.
Yep. It's just in case.
It's his personal eccentricity. Yeah. We are all permitted our own little eccentricities. Mm-hmm. What is a bag of poop among friends?
I don't know. Speaking of which, Doc Rod didn't say duties in this episode. He said duties.
Yes.
Just so you know, I didn't. That's why I didn't record the saying duties.
We see a sonic shower.
Sonic shower.
We saw sonic showers.
Sonic shower.
This looked very similar to the sonic showers on Lower Decks. So I can't remember. Have we seen another live action sonic shower? I'm not sure.
Live action sonic shower.
We've heard them referenced many times, of course.
Mm-hmm. There was no Gawk.
No Gawk.
If Jesse were here, Jesse would have pointed out that there was no Gawk.
Yes. And he probably would have pointed out a bunch of interesting historical analogs and other things.
Tent City looked like it sucked.
Yes. I think that, you know, the character of Dahl on Star Trek Prodigy, which everyone should be watching, even though Paramount Plus, for some reason, canceled it and took it away. Mm-hmm. Find a way to watch it.
Speaking of tax breaks, isn't that what they say? It's because of a tax break.
Probably. Fuck, whatever. But anyway, Prodigy's great. But the character of Dahl and Prodigy, this has been something that's been sticking in the back of my brain, and it kind of jumped to the front of my brain. I think he has the same haircut as Captain Pike. I think Dahl has Captain Pike hair.
Interesting.
I think he got his hair. Maybe he's like a long-lost... relative of Captain Pike.
So you think when Ortega said, "No, he's pretending, I sense it and I don't want to play along," you think she was wrong about him, Doc Rao?
I think Ortega's is great. I think she also is somebody who suffered from trauma. And I think the problem is when you've dealt with trauma, it can affect your decision-making and your perceptions, but it can also give you experience that makes you more attuned to things. And I think that's the terrible paradox of things is that should she be taken more seriously because of her experiences, or should we consider that she might have some biases, right? You know, you talk about different characters. There's another example I thought was a very interesting thing they stated, which is Mbenga. I think the best part of this whole episode was that last little conversation between Mbenga and Pike, because I think so much was said in that episode, in that brief conversation. But particularly when Mbenga made the point, he said to Captain Pike, he said, "You have the privilege of like not having seen what I've seen." And it's not that Pike hasn't seen some serious gnarly shit, but he hasn't seen what Mbenga is like. You have not lived my life. And that choice of the word privilege there, it works, of course, within the episode, but there's that meta example, because Captain Pike, he's a great captain, but he is your typical like white male, super masculine, super hot daddy guy who maybe he hasn't had the most easy life in the world, but yeah, he seemed like he's always kind of like the popular guy, right? He's like the captain of the football team kind of guy, right? It's not just the whiteness. It's the position in society that Pike probably he had a privileged position. I think they're saying a little bit more. I think there's some more supposed to filter out of the screen to hit us a little bit. So I enjoyed that part. I thought that was really, that conversation, again, even though it didn't entirely make sense for the rest of the episode, I thought that conversation was a really great way to end the episode, tie things together.
I think Mbenga at the very last line was kind of like, wait, you're not really talking about that. When he goes, "Biobed 2 is working again, at least for now, but I know it's only a matter of time before it shuts down again. Something's breaking away that can never be repaired, only managed." I mean, we know you're not talking about a biobed. Because if you were, like, would you say all that about a damn biobed?
Well, okay. So first of all, they did that thing where at the beginning of the episode, he's all like ripping the guts out, and he's like, "Oh, ever since the Gorn attack, it just hasn't been the same."
Yeah.
And at the end, when he fixes it, and he's like, he's giving that little, like, "You can only fix it." He goes, "It's not always 100% fixed." I was surprised. You know, it starts flashing like error or something on the screen.
Oh,
I was surprised it wasn't flashing like metaphor. Metaphor.
Yeah, right.
Metaphor.
Yeah, I know.
Metaphor. Because
awesome.
they were hitting that pretty fucking hard.
Yeah. Yeah. They were laying on a little thick at parts. I don't know. Like I said, my opinion is that, like I've said before, Doc Rao is at best tactless, at worst, probably like, you know, being just kind of like subconsciously an asshole who wants to sort of exploit and leverage any scenario for his benefit, even if that means helping the people. And then, of course, the question is, does it matter? I don't know.
I don't
look
know.
At scenario. Does it matter if you help if you're an ass, if whether or not why you're helping doesn't matter, that you are helping, but there's a difference between giving money and there's a difference between
giving me delicious money.
There's a difference between giving money and there's a difference between being in a position.
Any money.
There's a difference between giving money and there's a difference between being in a position of power and having, you know, when you finally make peace and get to some sort of power, where do you go from there? And he could turn all bad later on. But there's nothing in the episode to really let us think too deeply on that. But
I just call it the moon.
I was just shaded out by that guy. I don't know.
We all just call it the moon. I agree with you. I like the we all just call it the moon thing because that's a reference to the whole, like, you know, Luna colony. There was, I believe it was on Deep Space Nine, the Valiant episode. There's a person from Luna.
Terra Luna?
Yeah. And I think Jake or Nog? Somebody's asking them where they're from Luna. And they're like, oh, we just call it the moon, you know? So that's a good reference. What? Nah. The other thing I wanted to mention is that, this is not, you know, Star Trek has done, first of all, Star Trek has done dinner with the enemy a bunch of times. That's like a classic thing, like Star Trek VI.
What'd you do?
So there's a lot of, you know, there's a MASH-like element here. But this was really close to the Deep Space Nine episode, the Siege of AR 5.
Siege.
Yes, the
Siege.
Yes, the Siege.
It's not pronounced Siege.
Siege.
It's pronounced Siege.
Or Siege.
But not Sigi.
Nobody said Sigi.
I'm just saying.
Sigi is a brand of yogurt.
I'm just saying.
Icelandic yogurt.
Because we're playing the connection game, right?
The connection game?
That's the word game we're playing. We're playing the connection game.
That's what Spock and Shabu were playing. No, the Siege.
Playing like playing the guitar.
The siege of AR-558.
AR-588.
No, 558.
5588.
AR-558. In which Nog is in
I love
ground,
eggnog, don't you?
He's in a ground battle. It's actually one of the first times we really see a serious representation of Starfleet ground battle. And in fact, they're fighting the Klingons in that one. A great episode, a real fucking intense episode.
Hey, did you hear about the fire at the circus?
Oh, no, it was intense.
Uh-huh.
Ah. All right. Jesse will be back the next episode, and he will help corral some of Dan and Mai's worst proclivities. Mm-hmm. However,
power restored.
However, I think that does it for us this week. Of course, please follow us on social media if you are so inclined. All the social media is at It's Got Star Trek. Definitely write us an email with any questions, comments, critiques, etc. you have to help us celebrate our 200th episode. And questions, it could be a question about Star Trek, a question about podcasting, a question about stuff we like outside of Star Trek. Whatever you want, whatever you might have, that's fine.
Please.
You can send us an email. Of course, what would be even better is if you would send us an audio file. And you heard it all at the beginning of the episode, so I'll just leave it to itsgotstartrek.com/record. Go there. We made it super easy for you. And most importantly, if you don't like what you recorded, before you send it, you can erase it or redo it. So don't worry about, like, don't stress out about it. It's going to be fine. You don't get to fucking freak out about it, okay? It's just fine.
The nice thing is even if it's not perfect the first time, you can always fix it. And that's how one can psych themselves out, being like, what if I make it? It sucks. So you just make it better.
Yeah. We're just having a fun time here. But learn
when to stop changing your shit. Learn when you've made something good
and then just
move on.
You're good.
You got to find that balance.
Yeah. So the next episode, we will be discussing Subspace Rhapsody, which I think. If the early scuttlebutt on the internet is any word, there's no spoilers about it. Nobody's seen this. Nobody knows what it's about. However, there's already lots of opinions because some people are like, I will never watch a musical episode of Star Trek. Some people are like, I've been waiting for a musical episode of Star Trek for my entire fucking life. I am somebody, personally, I'm a huge fan of musicals. I'm very curious to see how it works out in the Star Trek context. So we look forward to seeing that episode and then talking about it in the next episode of It's Got Star Trek. So, anything else, Dan? Are you good to go?
I can't believe I didn't get to fit this in. I couldn't find a spot.
I'm more virile than I appear.
It gets such a, it's a great, I think that's a perfect thing to put in a lot of funny places.
If Jesse were here,
I would have found it.
You would have, within the first minute of the podcast.
I'm more virile than I appear.
Exactly.
I would just look at Jesse.
You would be looking at Jesse's
eyes. And I'd want to tell him, hey, Jesse, you know something?
I'm more virile than I appear.
And he would be like, Dan, what did we talk about?
He's like, not on the podcast. Yeah. All right, we'll talk to you next episode. Bye-bye.
Christine Chapel, welcome to Jagal.
Commander Martinez, thank you.
Everyone calls me Buck.
Okay.
Whatever you need, we probably don't have it, but ask anyway. I'll run it up the flagpole and see if it quacks.
Right.